Wishing you a very pleasant good afternoon, wherever you may be.
Omaha! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello?
Cincinnati.
5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport.
Good afternoon, Lakeland. You know what that music means. It's time for the Sports Access. I'm your host, Peter DeFee. As always, inside studio on Southeastern campus. A lot of basketball to talk about today. Great show today. I am not joined by anybody today, so it is all by myself, which I'm completely fine with, but, you know, it gets a little lonely in here. So hopefully Julian will be back next week. He's talked to me. We're trying to work out schedules and everything. But like I promised, some football news. No Pro Bowl news. I didn't even watch the skills competition yesterday, which apparently was on yesterday. Also, some basketball news. And I'll go into a little bit of some college hoops as well, as that's starting to heat up. We're into January. Sooner or later, the tournaments for every conference will be rolling around. And then sooner or later, it's going to be March Madness and tourney time. So best kind of like couple of months of the year, baseball starting to come back. Sorry if I'm sounding a little nasally today. Or more than usual. Got a little bit of some allergies. Hopefully they go away a couple of days. Hopefully I'm not sick, because that would not be good. But sorry for any noises other than me talking about sports that you might hear today. I'll try to keep that down to a minimum and try to make sure I'm not coughing into the mic at all. But first, as always, we start with some top news. Chris Paul, the Rockets guard, is nearing a return with the Rockets either Sunday versus the Magic or Tuesday versus New Orleans. Actually, it would be Sunday, because I did get the Bleacher Report before coming onto the show that he will return Sunday versus the Magic. He was listed as questionable to return today, but ultimately will return Sunday. He was out since December 20th with a hamstring injury. If anybody remembers, that's what kept him out of the playoffs last year in the conference championship series versus the Warriors for the last two games, 6 and 7. That hamstring injury, which is riddled. He's been riddled with that injury before, so now it kept him out since December 20th. He is nearing a return. The Rockets were 11-5 though, however, in his absence, and Harden has just been on an absolute tear the last couple of games, averaging 38 points a game this year, or excuse me, 36 points a game this year. I think it was like 45 in the month of January or something. So absolutely incredible what he's been doing. But getting Chris Paul back will help, and will help them become more of a contender right now. They're in the sixth spot right now, so they would be playing on the road to start the series off against the number three seed, which I don't know who that is at the top of my head. I would guess Denver would be the number three seed right now, if I had to guess, or Oklahoma City. One of those two teams I would have to guess would be the three seed. You know, the Rockets really haven't played a whole lot of good competition in the last couple of games. They played the Nets, which I know they're the sixth seed, but they're still the Nets. They played the Mavericks, and they played the Knicks the last couple of games. And, you know, even beating the Knicks, where Harden scored 61 points, they just barely beat the Knicks, 114-110. Needed every bit of those 61 points to win. They lost to the Nets, where he scored 58. You know, the surprising Nets, who have been terrific this season, were able to hold off Houston just long enough for them to get the win. And there's no doubt that Harden needs some more help with Paul coming back, and hopefully Clint Capela coming back in the near future Chris Paul will aid James Harden and help him come back. But then once Chris Paul and James Harden comes back, once Clint Capela comes back, that will really help the Rockets and those two stars this season. So, you know, the 61 point win, you know, was good. Didn't get assisted on any one of those points, however, And it was one of those games where if I'm one of the Houston Rockets, I'm like, you know, why am I on the floor right now with James Harden? It's like, I understand that they won and they're scoring points and everything, but if I'm an Eric Gordon and, you know, I'm touching the ball 5 times a game when I know I can score 20-plus points, or, you know, what does it make a difference if I'm on the court if it's going to be a lot of ISO ball? So in my opinion, I think that's gonna lead to some type of resentment towards teammates, like, hey, why am I not getting the ball as much? I know you're our playmaker, but let's distribute the basketball. You see what the Warriors are doing. You see what Denver's doing. You see what San Antonio did throughout their dynasty with Popovich and Tim Duncan and Tony Parker and Ginobili and all them. They were pass first, score second. Really able to spread the floor out. I know James Harden's able to spread the floor out because he can score from anywhere, but it's the tale of two tapes where what happens now when Chris Paul comes back and he needs the ball to be kind of productive. He's not really an off-ball kind of guy. What does James Harden do? Clint Capella comes back where he can score down in the post. What does he do? So how does this team work around now that James Harden's getting 61 points and nobody assisted him on the points? Not one point did somebody go, here, you're open for a three. He made all those points happen by isolation basketball. So, you know, it's one of those things that I know Julian, you know, one of my co-hosts that's with me, he loves pass basketball. And what I mean by pass basketball is pass the ball to get the open guy, have guys cutting into the basket, have guys cutting, you know, cutting to the basket, but then kick out to the open man on the 3-point line, stuff like that. So to me, it's a lot better to watch that than it is to watch somebody just ISO the ball, you know, 70 times a game and try to score 61 points. Also, he took up 38 shots. He was 5 from 20 from 3-point land. So I mean, it was a different kind of 61 points. It wasn't the 61 points that, you know, Kobe would score, or 61 points like a Jordan would score, or 60 points that LeBron James would score, Curry, whoever. It was just a different type of 61 points. And granted, he scored 61 points, so all the power to him. But it was just one of those things that, like, come on, you're not getting your teammates any type of looks. You're not doing anything trying to help score the points. Like, they're not doing anything on your points. Like, they're not helping you in any way. So why would I want to be out there on the floor when I know I'm not going to get the ball and I'm not even going to help you score? So I think it's going to be one of those things that's going to lead to resentment down the line. On to some more top news. Spencer Dinwiddie, who we were talking about Wednesday in the show, he'll be out 4 to 6 weeks with a hand injury. He has torn ligaments in his finger, but will look for a second opinion before he decides how to go about fixing his injury. The 25-year-old this year is averaging 17 points and 5 rebounds per game. He's played in all 49 games this year. He's been an amazing addition. Scored 33 points in their win versus the Magic, and it didn't really look like he was injured, so a lot of people were questioning how he got the injury, but it's one of those injuries that now, you know, the Nets are going to have to look for Shabazz Napier to play a possible bigger role coming off the bench. D'Angelo Russell, who is the starting point guard, Dinwiddie was coming off the bench, especially in the Magic game. He's going to stay the starting point guard, but he's going to have to elevate his role a little bit. He only got 10 points against the Magic. Napier only got 5 or 6, if I remember correctly, looking at the box score. So it's going to be one of those things that now Nets guys are going to have to step up, have to play bigger roles, especially Shabazz Napier, who, quick side note, when he went to the Heat, I thought was going to be that next point guard that was going to help Dwayne Wade, help LeBron James, help Chris Bosh. You know, LeBron James said he loved the way he played, so initially I watched highlights, you know, watching him at UConn win the national championship as an 8 seed, you know. It was really cool seeing what he can do. I thought, you know, he's a little bit less of a Kemba Walker was in UConn. Not really that great of a shooter, but somebody that can facilitate the basketball and just run the game well enough to score points and score lots of them. And it was just one of those things that never really came to fruition. So he'll have to step up for the Nets this year. D'Angelo Russell will have to play a bigger role again, like I said. So this Nets team is going to have to find somewhere or somebody to step up in Dinwiddie's absence. Another thing too, on Wednesday, I believe it came out, I don't remember if we went over this on Wednesday, before I get into more of the news, Victor Oladipo is likely out for the year after he tore ligaments in his knee. Unfortunately for him, he was one of the fun guys to watch. I don't have all the specifics out here because I just remembered it at the top of my head. But he went out with an injury and had to get stretchered off. I believe it was on either Tuesday or Wednesday. And I just completely forgot. It could have been even yesterday too, but I just completely forgot to mention it. So thoughts and prayers go out to him. He was a really fun guy to watch. All-star last year. You know, I thought if he beat the Cavs, if the Pacers had beat the Cavs last year in the, I believe it was the second round of the playoffs, I thought he would have cemented himself as a superstar, as a Kemba Walker type of player, superstar that just needs help. But he is likely done for the rest of the year. So thoughts and prayers go out to him for a speedy recovery. And hopefully he makes it back okay and can become one of these guys like a Paul George that came back from a gruesome injury and is playing really well. So on to some football news. It is reported that Cam Newton underwent surgery on his shoulder injury that plagued him during the past season. Everyone assumed Cam was injured, myself included. The throws that he was able to make even last year were not being made this year. The ball just didn't look like it was coming out of his hands as good as it was before. Balls were dropping at the feet of open receivers and just didn't have any velocity or carry on them that they usually do. And watching some of his games, especially the Saints game, he just did not look comfortable at all. He looked like he was injured. He looked like he was babying his throws. It looked like he just was trying to just do all he can to get the ball out of his hand without hurting his shoulder. And yeah, usually coincides with a shoulder injury. And just that Saints game, he just did not look good. Only had 150 yards in the air. Offense just looked anemic. Didn't look good at all. That whole game, even on the Saints side, was just sloppy. So now this is another thing too, though. He missed the final two games of the regular season. They went on to win the last game against the Saints with their two backups. But the biggest thing that is concerning about this is that he had surgery on his shoulder already in March of 2017. And as everybody knows, shoulder injuries and surgeries are something that this team might need to take a look at. And it's something that shoulder surgeries and injuries are things that people really need to evaluate as how serious is this. Same thing happened with Andrew Luck. Now, I'm not saying Cam Newton and Andrew Luck are the same thing because Andrew Luck is a more prolific thrower of the football than Cam is, but Cam can scramble a lot better than Andrew Luck is, or Andrew Luck can. You know, Andrew Luck was almost out for 2 full years. He missed the whole 2017 season. Got injured, had the surgery after the 2016 season, was out the whole 2017 season recovering, and they didn't know if he was going to be back for the 2018 season. Obviously, he was, and he was able to make a full recovery, and he looked fantastic this year. Could have been in the MVP consideration. Is actually in the MVP consideration, but Patrick Mahomes is just going to take that game over, or take that spotlight over from him with his 50 touchdowns. But you know, his stats were up last year, and the reason I also say that they might need to look at Cam's replacement is that ever since his 2015 MVP season, he just hasn't looked the same. Now, his stats were up, his completions were up, his touchdowns were up, his interceptions were down from the last couple of years. Rushing was okay this year. His rushing yards usually stay the same every year just because he's, you know, 6'6 and can do whatever he wants in the pocket or outside the pocket. It's one of those things that 2015 season was amazing, but now it's starting to go down a little bit. His completion percentage, although it's been up, was down the last couple of years. I know he was injured the last couple of years because he did have a similar injury in 2016 that kind of sidelined him a little bit. He got healthy with that. It's just, it might be time for them to really consider maybe in the next couple of years trying to get the most they can out of Cam while also trying to groom their next replacement for Cam Newton. So Cam Newton, like, I think is one of the next, or is a generational talent. He just, the way he was, especially in Auburn, especially in the first couple of years, especially in 2015, he was just unbelievable in 2015, but still he's not the same Cam I think he was when he first came into the league. I know he's gotten a little better. He's gotten a little more experience, but he's still very inconsistent game to game, season to season. That's why the Carolina Panthers have not made the playoffs in back-to-back seasons. They have not had a winning season in back-to-back seasons. And that showed this year when they went 6-2 and then ultimately lost 8 straight. So, you know, one of those things that, hey, let's see what he's going to do. He should be, you know, the surgery was minor. He should be ready to go by OTAs in May. But, you know, the question still, it still begs the question, you know, how will Cam recover? How will he act? How will he throw? What's the damage done to his arm? Is his, you know, what's going to happen? Is he going to have to rely more on his legs than his than his feet. And if that's the case, what happens with Christian McCaffrey and his playmaking abilities, especially pass catching abilities? What's going to happen with that? What's going to happen with his offense? There's a lot of questions surrounding this area for the Panthers, and it's one that they're going to have to take a serious look at come the future. So on to some more pressing news topic, though. You know, this Antonio Brown drama that everybody's heard has dragged on in the public eye for a little over a month now. Everybody, I'm sure, has heard about it in some way, and everybody assumed that it's been going on for a while, a little over this month. Well, an ex-Steeler came out and said Mike Tomlin tolerated Antonio Brown because of his production and that his time in Pittsburgh is probably done. This is what an ex-Steeler said. So just look at that first part. Mike Tomlin tolerated Antonio Brown because of his production. So that's basically saying to everybody that says coaches don't pick favorites, you know, people don't have favorites in the work industry because everybody should be equal. Well, this is a big old slap in the face. Basically, Mike Tomlin let Antonio Brown do whatever he wanted in that locker room, off the field, on the field, whatever, because of his production. I mean, he had 104 receptions this year for 1,297 yards and a career-high 15 touchdowns. So that's pretty good production. But the fact that Mike Tomlin is just letting Antonio Brown do whatever he wants in the locker room. Everybody remembers the Facebook Live incident where you could hear Tomlin call the Patriots a couple of choice words. And then also the fight between Antonio Brown and Big Ben this year that caused Brown to sit out of the season finale against the Bengals. It was that off-field fight issue rather than the knee injury that the team thought or the team said was happening on the injury report. So, you know, this team had the Le'Veon Bell issue to start the season. You know, they wouldn't extend him a contract offer, so he decided to sit out the season. And then teammates started coming after him, calling him selfish and for what he was doing. You know, and ultimately James Conner came in and replaced Bell without missing a lot of beats. But the situation seemed to boil over for the whole season. Many fans just wanted the Pittsburgh Steelers to pay Le'Veon Bell because he was the best running back they've had in a while since Jerome Bettis. This organization, I don't want to say it's dysfunctional because it's not Cleveland where it is dysfunctional. I wasn't going to bring this up, but everybody that saw the report a couple of days ago where Jim Dorsey and somebody else and probably the owner came in to fire Hugh Jackson, you know, he basically said, you know, get the bleep out of my office. And that's how dysfunctional the Cleveland Browns have been in the last couple of years. And hopefully Baker Mayfield can rise above it and it's not too much of an issue and they can start to turn this season around. They went 7-8-1. I predicted them to go 8-8. They should have won that one tie or at least one of those losses. So I was almost correct with that. So hopefully this year during the draft, they can get some more skilled players around Baker Mayfield. But anyway, so that Le'Veon Bell situation kind of boils over. Now you have the Antonio Brown situation. He's on Instagram, you know, quoting Jerry Rice, one of the greatest, or if not the greatest, wide receiver of all time, who has had connections to the 49ers because he played there basically his whole career, except a couple of seasons in Oakland. But basically, he quoted Jerry Rice, but he also put a picture of the quote with Antonio Brown in a 49ers uniform. So something tells me that the 49ers are A, going to get Antonio Brown, they're the favorites, and B, Antonio Brown's time in Pittsburgh is over. And it has been for this year. It's just that now it's starting to finally boil over. So what's to make of this whole thing is that I think this Pittsburgh Steelers situation is getting very dysfunctional in terms of how they conduct on and off the field situations with their players and their coaches and everything else. You know, like I said, he had a career year this year and Mike Tomlin put up with it because of the production. So if Mike Tomlin didn't really necessarily like him as a person, as a off the field person, but put up with him because of the production. And that just goes to show you that the Pittsburgh Steelers value on the field actions more than they value off the field actions. Like how most organizations will value on and off the field action. They want you to be a better person off the field than they do on the field. Pittsburgh Steelers don't care about you off the field. They care about you more on the field. And that's exactly what Mike Tomlin said when, or that's exactly what this ex-Steeler said when Mike Tomlin would put up with Antonio Brown because of his production. So a lot of guys, like, put in perspective again, the Cleveland situation with Josh Gordon, they wanted him to be better off the field before they got him on the field. And when things just escalated too much to where off-the-field issues were becoming too prevalent above on-the-field issues, they said, hey, We care about you too much of a person. We're going to give you a new change of scenery. Hopefully, a new team will get new perspective into you. Unfortunately, you know, with the whole situation of him getting suspended again, didn't really work out. But Cleveland had a better interest in him as a person than they did as a player. You know, and a lot of other teams are interested more in your personal life. Same thing with the Ray Rice and Kareem Hunt incident. They didn't want that personal life. Well, I know now, before I get into it, I know it's, you know, domestic abuse and everything like that, but they didn't want that personal stuff going over into their field and on the field issues, or leading to on the field issues. So they cut him loose. Same thing with Reuben Foster. You know, he was accused, and ultimately the charges were dropped because the woman came out and said, you know, I wasn't really abused by him, or at least that's what the report said. So, but they still let him go. Now there's been, you know, cloud over him. You know, Washington picked him up, which I don't think was really the right thing to do. I think anybody abused or anybody accused of abusing women or domestic assault doesn't really get another chance to be in the league, but to each its own. You know, maybe Washington can get him, set him straight, and hopefully the reports are true that it wasn't factual that he was abusing the woman. But a lot of teams look at personal things over on the field stuff, and right now the Steelers are just looking at on the field stuff instead of personal stuff. So if he did stay, he still has, if Antonio Brown does stay, he has 3 years left on his 4-year, $68 million contract with the Steelers. And this would be the last season, or if this was the last season of Antonio Brown in the black and yellow, the 30-year-old 2010 sixth-round pick out of Central Michigan will have finished out his Steeler tenure with a 7-time Pro Bowl selections and 4 first-team All-Pro nods. That's another thing, too. He's 30 years old, still putting up this production, and he was a sixth-round pick out of Central Michigan. For 5 rounds, nobody believed in him. Sixth round comes along, Pittsburgh is going to pick him up and say, hey, we're going to give you a shot in 2010. Played amazing in his first couple of seasons. Got even better. The 3 Bs, Bell, Brown, and Ben, all played terrific the last couple of seasons. Had a little hiccup against Jacksonville last year, or who knows, they might beat the Patriots in the AFC Championship game and go on to the Super Bowl to face the Eagles, and who knows, maybe even win the Super Bowl. But as a 2010 sixth-round pick, something to hang your hat on for Antonio Brown, as he's really done a great job. I know I picked him up in fantasy, had an amazing fantasy season for me. One of my favorite guys to watch on the football field, just has fun, has a ton of fun just playing the game of football. Him and Juju are probably the 2 best wide receiver combos, you know, on any team. So just to watch them, that's really fun to watch. Finally, some more baseball news, though, however. All-star outfielder A.J. Pollock and the Los Angeles Dodgers have agreed to a 5-year, $55 million deal. According to MLB insider Buster Olney, Pollock is slated to make $55 million in the first 4 years of the deal, but could earn an opt-out after year 3 if he reaches a set number of plate appearances. It was not stated what the set number of plate appearances are, or he could earn that opt-out year if he reaches those set number. The 5th year is a player option for $10 million with a $5 million buyout. This is a 31-year-old who spent the first 7 seasons with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Had some firsts with them, was a 2015 All-Star and Gold Glove winner. Last year, he slashed .257 with a .316 on-base percentage and a .484 slugging percentage. The .257 was his average. He had 21 home runs and 65 RBIs. So kind of, you know, not really a good year, down from what he's been at before, especially in 2015 where he was the All-Star. But, you know, since his All-Star campaign in 2015, he's had a hard time getting back to that level. He's missed 249 games over the last 3 years, which is a lot, considering that most guys will only miss at most 10-15 games in a season due to, you know, either rest or platooning, maybe a slight injury that you need to rehab. But 249 games in the last 3 years is a lot. You know, he settled into that nice, solid, everyday starting role and should benefit the Dodgers outfield after they traded away Yasiel Puig and Matt Kemp in December. But he's not going to be anything special for the Dodgers. You know, the Dodgers are also interested in moving Jock Peterson via trade. They're likely going to do that because they have top prospect Alex Verdugo in their minor league system, who is looking ready to come up and produce at a big league level. They also have Cody Bellinger, who, if they don't want to play him at first base because of Max Muncy, can also play Bellinger in one of the corner positions, because I believe Alex Verdugo is a center fielder. So you could have A.J. Pollock, Alex Verdugo, and Cody Bellinger all in the same outfield, which would be a really good, solid outfield. Pollock plays above average defense. He's got an above average bat. You know, he can hit 21 home runs. That was in Arizona. LA is kind of like the same stadium, same atmosphere, so he should be able to hit around those numbers again. The average and the on-base percentage have to come up. 257 as, you know, a perennial leadoff hitter, as he was in Arizona. Not going to cut it, especially in LA when you need guys to get on base to help your 3, 4, 5 hitters produce. Like I said, 21 home runs is good. 65 RBIs for a center fielder is actually pretty good, so the 21 and 65 is good, but the average and on-base percentage need to come up. Slugging percentage is a little below average, but that has to do with his actual batting average. Alex Verdugo is going to come up. They're going to probably take Jock Peterson out of that lineup and try to trade him. If not, Jock Peterson would be the fourth outfielder. AJ Pollock will help solidify that outfield spot. The Dodgers are also going to look to upgrade at the catching position with JT Realmuto. They've had some talks with the Marlins, but nothing, you know, big yet. Nothing in terms of getting a deal done has been talked about yet, but there's a lot of teams. The Rays are one of them. Dodgers, I know there was a third team. I just can't remember right now. But the Rays and the Dodgers are two that I've heard a lot come up in that talks. Might have been an NL Central team as well. Maybe the Pirates, as far as wanting JT Realmuto. But they're in talks with them. So the Dodgers are going to get better this offseason. Have gotten better this offseason. Did trade away a couple of pieces that I kind of scratched my head out. Like Yasiel Puig, Matt Kemp, Alex Wood to the Reds. So kind of some head-scratching moves. But, you know, the Dodgers are going to be the Dodgers. They have all that money that they want from Hollywood. So they can really do whatever they want. But since they did sign Pollock to a deal over $50 million, they do surrender the 31st pick to the Diamondbacks this year in the upcoming draft, one of the new collective bargaining agreements that came out this last year. So they surrender that 31st pick, but they get Pollock. We'll have to see how that outfield plays out, how that lineup plays out, because, you know, a lot of people thought they were going to try to get Bryce Harper as well. They've come out and said that, you know, they're kind of not in the running for him anymore. So still waiting for Bryce Harper and Manny Machado to sign. I don't know what's taking him so long. Just Machado signed to the White Sox. Bryce signed to the Phillies. Let's call it a day. I want to see how those lineups turn out. I want to get ready to the season and see how, you know, see Bryce Harper drop 40 in Citizens Bank Park. You know, I want to see him drop 40. I want to see Machado when the White Sox make the playoffs as a wild card team. There's so many things I want to look forward to that. The 2019 free agent third baseman class with Arenado and Rendon are going to be incredibly insane. Those guys are going to make so much money. So I'm just ready for the season to go. But that's all the baseball news I have for right now. Hopefully, like I said, we'll get some more baseball news, because I'm kind of tired of just not getting any news at all. Like, this is kind of boring now. You know, hey, Bryce Harper, signed somewhere already. Manny Machado, you said you were going to do it after the new year. It's 25 days. Since you said that. So since the new year started, so let's get going. But on to some NBA news. Told you I was going to keep bringing that up. I have some All-Star news for you guys. 2019 NBA All-Stars have been announced for both the Eastern and Western Conferences. Giannis Antetokounmpo and LeBron James will serve as team captains for the game and will be drafting their teams in the upcoming days. Toronto Raptors forward Kawhi Leonard, Philadelphia big man Joel Embiid, Charlotte Hornets guard Kemba Walker, Boston Celtics guard Kyrie Irving were all voted into the starter pool for the Eastern side. For the Western side, Oklahoma City Thunder forward Paul George, Golden State Warriors forward Kevin Durant, Warriors guard Steph Curry, and Houston Rockets guard James Harden, Anthony Davis, Luka Doncic were all left out. Luka Doncic was left out from... He was on there in fan voting, but didn't get the player votes and the media votes necessary to put him to propel him into a starter role, so he is not there. Same thing as last year, the draft format is the same. Team captains can pick whichever player they want, regardless of conference. That'll take place again this year, which is a pretty cool aspect, because you got guys from the same team from the same team that could face off against each other, or have guys you would like to see play with each other. Like, if Anthony Davis is obviously going to make the All-Star reserves, he's just not a starter. But if Giannis and Anthony Davis were on the same team, you know, that'd be a cool team to watch. Like, that'd be a cool duo to watch on the floor. Like, how do they play? It's almost like, you know, it would be almost the same thing as if Kristaps Porzingis and Giannis were playing together. Or it's the same thing like Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins were playing together. And I was like, oh my God, that's really cool. You know, like the Rockets twin towers of old. So you have stuff like that. You know, I am still, though, a little bit of a traditionalist. I would have liked to have seen the Eastern Conference go against the Western Conference. But, you know, it's a pretty cool thing to watch. You know, it was entertaining last year. Everybody's going to, you know, everybody's still going to watch. I'm still going to watch. But, you know, I would have liked to have seen them do Eastern versus Western again. You know, it's always fun to watch that. And it's always an exciting game. Little bit of some notes and history on the game. This is LeBron James' 15th All-Star game start, tying Kobe Bryant for the most in NBA history. James also is tied with Tim Duncan, Shaquille O'Neal for the third all-time with 15 overall All-Star game appearances. Only Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Kobe Bryant have more. Abdul-Jabbar had 19, Bryant had 18. With the amount of seasons that LeBron James seems like he still has, there's no doubt that he'll at least catch up to Kobe Bryant. He only needs three more. He only needs four more to get to Abdul-Jabbar, so he should being the ultimate term, he should be able to make it to at least Abdul-Jabbar for the most in history. He might even set it with 20, which that would be pretty cool. But this year, the NBA and TNT will be doing something different, which is really cool. With the draft, they will be drafting the teams live on TV for the world to see, which is pretty cool because we all wanted to see it last year. You know, who was the first pick? Who was the last pick? So February 7th at 7 p.m., the draft's going to be televised, add a little bit of entertainment value. Also see, like I said, what goes on through the minds of the captains. You know, who are they going to pick first? You know, who is LeBron James going to pick? You know, who gets picked last? Why did they get picked last? If they even do that. Hopefully they do, like, hey, I'm going to, you know, hopefully LeBron James says with the first overall pick, I'm going to pick Kemba Walker because, you know, I would love to play with Kemba Walker. Or, you know, James Harden because I want somebody that's going to score 60 points in the All-Star game without me even trying to do anything. So, you know, stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see the draft there. I know I'll be watching it. The reserves will be announced on January 31st. So in the next couple of days, they should be announced. The snubs for the starters, Luka Doncic, Derrick Rose for the Eastern side, Dwayne Wade, who really wasn't a snub, but he'll make it on there because it's his last All-Star game. They should all be named reserves. So we'll all see them on the team in some way or somehow. Derrick Rose was one of those guys that, you know, he's done a fantastic job resurrecting his career this year and has really looked like the Rose of old sometimes. You know, can a rose bloom twice in a lifetime? You know, it's one of those questions that is getting answered now, that Derrick Rose has looked like the Derrick Rose of old, and it's really fun to watch. Still older, still less like his athletic self in 2011 when he won the MVP and you know, won the Rookie of the Year before, but it still looked amazing. Dwayne Wade in his 16th and final season. He was voted second among guards in the East, but with fans, but finished third due to a sixth place finish when they added the player vote. So Dwayne Wade, another guy that when he retires, you know, one of my favorite basketball players to watch. One of my favorite basketball players, period. So it'll be really sad to see him go. Still remember the 06 NBA Finals where he was down 0-2 to the Mavs and came back with 35-plus points in each of the next four games, and they won 4-2. You know, helping, you know, LeBron win his first title in 2012 over the Oklahoma State, and then subsequently winning back-to-back titles against San Antonio. So it was really fun to watch him during his career, but sad to see him go. But love the spirit that he brought to Miami. You know, Miami named a county after him, Wade County. It's going to be fun to watch his last couple of games. It'll be really fun to watch that All-Star game and see if he gets the Kobe treatment that Kobe got in his last All-Star game. That was in, what, 2016 now? 2015? Wow. It's been a couple of years since Kobe retired. But on to some more college basketball, or on to some college basketball news. The rankings came out for week 12 a couple of days ago. Tennessee leaped Duke as the number one team in the country. Tennessee is 16-1, have been on a complete tear of late. The only game they lost, mind you, was the game against Kansas, who was number two at the time, 87-81 in overtime. Other than that, they beat great teams like Gonzaga. They beat them 76-73. They beat a Florida team who's been rolling a little bit of late. They beat a very tough Vanderbilt team. They beat a very good Memphis team, very good Louisville team. Georgia Tech has had a pretty good team this year. You know, they've been a little bit up and down, but they're 11-8 still. But they've just been absolutely amazing. And they've been led by their top scorer this year, averaging 20 points, Grant Williams, a junior from Charlotte, North Carolina. 6'7 guy. I'm surprised I haven't heard his name more, maybe in like the lottery round, because he's averaging 20 points a game, 7 rebounds, and 3 assists. This is a guy that his freshman year averaged 12, his sophomore year averaged 15, and now he's averaging 20 points a game. Free throw percentage has gone up, 3-point field goal percentage has gone up. Field goal percentage has gone up. Free throw attempts and makes have gone up. Rebounds have gone up. Assists have gone up. Blocks, steals, you name it, have gone up. Turnovers have stayed the same, gone down a little bit. But he is just playing some of his best game. Against Vanderbilt, 43 points. Alabama, 21. Florida, 20. This is a guy that's almost averaging a double-double a game. But it's been consistent throughout the whole season. 18 points against Georgia, 25 against Tennessee Tech. Against Gonzaga, 16 and 12. He had 31 and 10 in the second game against Louisiana. Against Kansas, he had 18 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. Louisville, 24 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, and 3 blocks. I mean, this guy and this team is just having an incredible year right now. They got 5 guys in double figures. Four guys averaging pretty good amount of rebounds and about five or more. Got a bunch of guys that are averaging 5 or more assists. So this goes back to what I was saying about the Houston Rockets with, pass the ball first, worry about scoring, play good defense, which we all know James Harden doesn't do. But it's cool to watch Tennessee. They've been on fire lately. They won against Florida at Florida. They did the Gator Chomp, which was amazing to see. I loved watching that. This Tennessee Volunteers team is just on fire lately, playing a great game. They're going to have to compete with Duke, though, for that number one spot in the country, as Duke has just been still playing out of their mind. They've only lost 2 games. Zion Williamson against Pitt had 25 points with Jay-Z on the sideline, which is interesting to watch because, will Jay-Z sign Zion Williamson to Roc Nation? R.J. Barrett and Cam Reddish have been playing amazing as of late too. Cam Reddish only averaging 13.1 points per game, but still projected to be a top 5 pick. RJ Barrett, the number one recruit in the country out of Canada, 23 points a game, 31% field 3-point percentage, been amazing. Zion though is helping his team out in every single aspect. He's still got 2 steals, which is second on the team behind Trey Jones. So I think if I had to guess, I would think Duke and Tennessee right now are the 2 teams to beat going into what would be the conference tournaments for each team, as far as who do you not want to see and who do you not want to face and who do you want to be on a little bit of a cold spell going into the tournament. Because for the ACC, Duke, Virginia, I know Florida State's kind of slowed down a little bit, but they should still be up there. Virginia Tech, North Carolina, they got a lot of guys in the ACC who can, North Carolina State, Louisville, that can, play up there with the big boys. But, Duke, I watched the Duke-Virginia game. That was an awesome game to watch. Kyle Guy, especially against Florida State, was just unbelievable against Florida State. Played decent against Duke, had a little bit of a down game compared to that Florida State game. But even in the SEC, you got Tennessee, you got Kentucky, who's number 8 now. You have, Auburn, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, LSU, teams like that. So the SEC, ACC, which I don't think they have a challenge like the Big 12 and SEC and the ACC and Big 10 do, but I would like to see that where the SEC, ACC challenge, I would like to see them play that. That would be some good matchups. But, Michigan, after losing their first game, they fell back to number 5. Gonzaga moved up in the rankings. They're 18-2. There's a lot of good basketball teams. A lot of good top-heavy college basketball teams. Even Nevada's 18-1. Buffalo, who's not really getting all that good respect, is 17-1. They're 15th in the rankings. There's guys like Virginia Tech's not really known for having that great of a basketball team. They're number 10, 15-2. Marquette, who I haven't remembered being in the rankings in a long time. They're number 12 at 16-3. Maryland, 16-3. Like I said, Gonzaga 18-2, Virginia 16-1. Their only loss is to Duke. So, and you still have guys on the outside that could possibly make some type of a statement. Kansas State, Purdue, Florida State was number 11 at one point before losing to Boston College. They're 13-5 right now. 14-5 after beating their last team. I forgot who they played though. Oklahoma can make some noise. Indiana or teams like that. They're poised to make some deep runs into the tournament. I know Florida State had last year, they made it to the Elite Eight and they lost to Michigan, which I still think that was a game they could have won. But there's a lot of good college basketball teams this year. Recruiting is only going to go up for the teams in the top 25, especially Duke, Kansas, Tennessee, Virginia. They're always going to get the top teams. But if Florida State, teams like Florida State, Nevada, Marquette, Virginia Tech, Buffalo, teams like that can show you that they're improving, that they can stay in the top 25, are going to make big names for themselves sooner or later in the tournaments and everywhere else. So that's all I got from college basketball. Some more news that I've been getting throughout the show. The NFL fined Robbie Coleman, the Rams cornerback. They fined him $26,739 for the infamous, now it's an infamous, helmet-to-helmet hit that was not flagged during the NFC Championship game. So that wasn't flagged, but they fined him $26,000. Something tells me there's something going on there, like how Sean said on Wednesday about it. So that'll be interesting to see what happens with that, because Roger Goodell still really hasn't talked about it, and everybody's coming after him about his silence. Even one of the Saints wide receivers came after him, like, "Hey, Roger, why aren't you coming out and saying anything about this?" But so we'll see how that plays out. That should be really fun to watch play out. Also, the Red Sox have postponed their White House trip. They're expected to delay their visit until May because of the government shutdown. What is it, day 36 now? They're delaying their White House visit till May. Hopefully the government's not shut down anymore. But that's all for me on this end. Monday we'll be talking about some more basketball, some more football news going into the week of the Super Bowl. So that should be a lot of fun. Baseball, hopefully some news will come out of that with baseball. We'll have some more tournament talk with college basketball.
Like I said, I'll see if I can get some
NBA guys in here. This weekend is the NHL All-Star Game, so that should be a lot of fun. But other than that, as always, I'm your host, Peter DeFee, hoping you have a great Friday, and we will see you on Monday.
The thrill of victory and the agony of defeat.